better suited to sheep or goats. This is the first good proof that when humans first started herding cattle, they used the milk as well as the meat. So next time you're enjoying a cool drink of milk, thank the ancient Anatolians. This moment of science comes from Indiana University with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger with help from Jeffrey Conrad in anthropology. I'm Yael Cassander.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Prevena Medical Group's Diabetes and Obesity Clinic, a comprehensive clinic that addresses the patient's special needs, including nutrition, fitness, glucose monitoring, and cardiology. Appointments can be made at 217-337-1300.
It's 2:41. In sports, a light schedule tonight in the pros, just two games in the NBA. Boston is at Orlando, and Washington is in L.A. to take on the Lakers. The Chicago Blackhawks have reassigned defenseman Nicholas Jarlsmissman to the American Hockey League's Rockford Ice Hogs. The 21-year-old has been held without a point in two contests with the Blackhawks this season. The Swedish native has appeared in 35 games with Rockford this season, recording 9 assists, 10 points, and 41 penalty minutes. The University of Illinois women are in Columbus tonight to face Ohio State. The 19th-ranked Buckeyes, who have been off for a week, are coming off a loss to Minnesota last Tuesday. The Illinois women are looking for their first Big Ten win of the season. They fell to Ohio State earlier this month in Champaign, 67-35. The 25th-ranked Illini men, who are coming off a win against Ohio State on Tuesday, host Wisconsin on Saturday afternoon. Minnesota backup point guard Kevin Payton has been suspended for academic reasons. The 21st-ranked Gophers return to action tonight against number 18 Purdue. Coach Tubby Smith says the team could also be without senior center John Williams, who suffered a calf injury in practice this week. Purdue is approaching maybe its most difficult stretch of the basketball season. Four of the next five games are on the road, starting tonight at number 21 Minnesota. The other road games include Wisconsin, Ohio State, and number 25 Illinois. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers of the M2 on Neal mixed-use project in downtown Champaign. On the web at ratioarchitects.com.
When Portland, Oregon welcomed Sam Adams into office this month, it became the largest U.S. city to have an openly gay man as mayor. But already a sex scandal is muddying his short record. April Baer of Oregon Public Broadcasting reports.
Sam Adams was supposed to spend Tuesday at Barack Obama's inauguration. Instead, Portland's first openly gay mayor got to face down an army of TV cameras.
I want to apologize to the people of Portland for my dishonesty and for embarrassing them.
During Adams' mayoral run, rumors started churning about an alleged sexual relationship in the candidate's past with a young man called Beau Breedlove.
The allegation coming at me was sex with a minor.
Adams says that was not true, but he wasn't telling the whole story.
I should have told the truth at the time and taken the consequences then.
That truth, Adams says, is that sex did happen, but it didn't happen until a few weeks after Breedlove's 18th birthday, the age of consent in Oregon. Still, Adams says he didn't think anybody'd believe him, so he lied and asked Breedlove to do the same. The revelations have been a body blow to a city that prides itself on its thriving gay community. Portlanders were proud of Adams, and proud that his personal life hadn't been much of a campaign issue. But pride has turned to angry outrage, spilling over onto blogs, talk radio, and even some Sam Adams strongholds, including here at this gay community center. Tuesday morning, gay men, lesbians, transgendered people, and others gathered on couches and folding chairs to watch the inauguration.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave?
Sam Adams helped to found this place. To these people, he was part of a rising tide of social justice.
Here we are standing on the mountaintop, looking over. We've got our black president and our gay mayor, and we were going to get this done, you know? And now I just feel like We've totally been let down.
Portlander Kimberly Van Patten says the scandal is more than a setback.
We spend our whole lives trying to convince everyone that we're okay, that we're not broken or wrong. And I don't care who he slept with, but he lied.
In another corner of the room, Ryan Schultz was mindful of how 45-year-old Adams initially dismissed the story as a nasty smear. The worst kind an older gay man could face, Schultz says. A smear suggesting he was trying to recruit younger men into a gay lifestyle.
He was trying to break it down, that stereotype, but in fact he's building it up by lying about it.
The chorus of reprimands for Adams isn't quite citywide. Brian Boyd is a blogger for the site Gay Rights Watch, who's followed Adams' political career.
Things like this happen in the straight community all the time. Humans have sex, consensual sex, and that's that. I think Portland needs to get over that. And, you know, Sam does need to regain our trust in a lot of ways because he did lie.
But Boyd thinks Adams still has things to offer as mayor and that resignation is the wrong move. The city's police union, its major daily paper, and even the local gay newspaper disagree. All three are calling for Adams to step down. In some ways, the city's reaction has been colored by ghosts of the past. In 2004, former Portland Mayor Neil Goldschmidt was revealed to have sexually abused a 14-year-old girl over a period of years. While Adams' circumstances are very different, Portlanders are looking at this current scandal with a deep wariness. The Oregon Attorney General's office is investigating. For NPR News, I'm April Baer in Portland, Oregon.
The recession could push up the number of uninsured motorists. An insurance industry group says that as unemployment rises, so could the number of people who let their policies lapse. NPR's Jeff Brady reports.
The correlation between unemployment and driving without insurance seems logical, but now David Corum with the Insurance Research Council can put numbers on this phenomenon.
If the unemployment rate goes up by one percentage point, we would anticipate that the percentage of people who are uninsured would go up by 0.75 percentage point.
IRC researchers looked back at their data over two decades and found both statistics track each other very closely. And since the unemployment rate is expected to go up through 2010, Corum can predict a rise in uninsured drivers.
We are anticipating that the percentage of people who go uninsured will increase from 13.8% in 2007 to a little over 16% in 2010.
If you can predict a rise in uninsured drivers, then maybe it can be prevented. Consumer advocates suggest help for low-income drivers, especially in parts of the country like rural areas where public transit isn't always a viable option. California launched a low-cost auto insurance program a few years back. A family of four earning less than $53,000 a year can get a bare-bones policy for under $400. Jeff Brady, NPR News.
The stereotype of the starving artist isn't always true, but let's face it, some artists have a tough time finding affordable places to live and work. Sean Ali reports how one city is trying to solve this problem while revitalizing its downtown.
The city of Elgin, Illinois, has a housing crisis. Not so much for average residents, but for some artists. It's not that they're homeless, it's just, well, to understand, it helps to meet an Elgin artist.
My name.
You James?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. James.
I mean, this is James Abasian.
Don't really mind the house. I've been working on a couple projects, and I'm in.
When I get in, I'm dumbstruck. Wood sculptures cover Abasian's floor, and his dining room has stacks of paper and canvas. And right where most apartments would have a TV, Abasian's got an unfinished drawing.
And it's actually like a wine glass or martini glass, and it's on different angles.
Is it a charcoal drawing?
Yeah, it's charcoal.
Abasian started art 8 years ago. He says he'd like to make a living with it and rent a fancy studio, but he's just not there yet, so he lives where he works.
My apartment is nothing but paintings and frames.
I think the major space that doesn't have some charcoal or something on it is your couch.
Couch, that's about it, yeah.
It can take a while for artists like Abasian to hone their craft, so they make do with space not meant for working. It's enough for the city of Elgin to step in and try to help at least some artists find better quarters. Oh, and by the way, the city thinks the solution might solve a problem it has, too. Ed Schock is Elgin's mayor. I find him downtown outside a two-story brick building.
So where are we, Mayor?
We are looking at the Elgin Community College downtown campus building.
Schock is considering whether this building might work as an artist colony, a place where Elgin artists could afford to live and work.
We have an unusual number of artists that are here who would like to continue to, you know, do their art, but economic reality set in. One of the biggest ones, housing. Plus, just having 45, 50 residents in the downtown is a big plus. You know, one of our strategic goals is to increase the number of people who reside in the downtown.
Inside, Schock and I meet staffers from a nonprofit group that's helping Elgin develop artist housing. They're with Art Space of Minnesota. Art Space wants to see the building firsthand. They need to make sure it's the best fit for Elgin and the artists. Wendy Holmes says lots of cities want artists to make older parts of town more attractive. Holmes says it works for cities, but it doesn't always work for artists in the long run.
Artists have traditionally been displaced from their spaces because artists make areas interesting and hip and desirable to move into, and then other people tend to move in behind them, and those people can afford to pay higher rents, and therefore then the artists are usually forced out because their rents will go up to be, and they'll be too high for the artists themselves to afford.
ArtSpace does something about that. It uses federal low-income housing credits, so rents stay affordable, and struggling artists stick around. Another staffer, Heidi Kurtz, asks about public transit, grocery stores, and how much light these windows get.
You need natural light into your living space, but for artists in particular, natural light is a critical piece for them to be able to do the work that they do.
Kurtz takes this as seriously as a family buying a house. After all, this could be some artist's home for decades. It could take 2 years for ArtSpace to finish its Elgin project. Artists like James Abasian will have to make do until then. For the Environment Report, I'm Sean Ali.
Everyone needs to eat, but not everyone gets their groceries at the supermarket. Some people find their food. They forage in backyards, forests, even city parks. It's free. Some of it tastes pretty good. And as Samara Freemark reports, sometimes it's even legal.
It's a beautiful fall day in New York's Central Park, and Steve Brill is looking for something to eat.
Hey, everyone, come over here. We have another species. Come on over here.
Steve Brill, I'm sorry, that's Wildman Steve, leads foraging tours in parks all over the New York area. And today he says he's going to prove to me and about 30 others that the park is full of things to eat.
Yeah, here, try this. Here's a large piece. Let me know.
But the tour starts out a little rough. At first, we find a lot more plants that can kill us than feed us. Yellow violets will make you vomit. So will pokeberries. So will pokeweed.
Is this the worst thing you've ever smelled? The chemical is called butyric acid. The name comes from rancid butter. This is a common element in decaying flesh.
Foraging isn't for the faint of heart or for the uneducated. Wildman is very careful to tell people to study up before they start snacking on the weeds in their backyards. But he says once you learn to recognize edible plants, it's pretty easy to tell them apart from the poisonous ones.
You have to know what the plant is. If you go into a supermarket, you have to tell the difference between the apples and the cigarettes. The apples are good for you, the cigarettes will kill you. Black walnut doesn't look much like poison hemlock. They all have their identifying characteristics.
And it turns out there's a lot of stuff out there that is edible. Chew some birch bark, it tastes like wintergreen. Primrose has a root like a radish. Garlic mustard tastes like, well, garlic mixed with freshly cut grass. Most of us didn't really love that one, but the crab apples were great.
Okay, this is a crab apple tree, ripe crab apples. They have a texture of applesauce and a flavor like tamarind. Spit out the seeds.
These are really addictive.
Okay, but before you start poking around in your neighborhood park, there's one more thing you should know. The thing about foraging is, it's kind of quasi-legal. You're not really supposed to pick the plants in most parks. And Wildman Steve himself has gotten in a bit of trouble for this. In 1986, Central Park officials busted him for foraging. They let him off in handcuffs and charged him with criminal mischief. Wildman eventually got off, and he hadn't had any run-ins with the law since. Until this year. A week after I met Wildman Steve, he was in court again. This time it was for harvesting sassafras.
Defacing the park, that was my crime. There's no defacing at all. I didn't damage or destroy anything. This is total nonsense.
Wild Man Steve faces fines of up to $2,000, but he keeps coming back. Why would he stop, he asks me. His tours can change how people see the world around them, and that's more important than a court date. Take 12-year-old Rory Langan. Rory told me his cousin has a black walnut tree in his backyard, but it never occurred to Rory that the walnuts he found on the lawn had any connection to the nuts you buy in the store.
I never thought you could eat it. I thought it was, like, poisonous. It's actually pretty cool, though. Pretty good.
He says he can't wait to get home and take his cousin outside for an after-school snack. For the Environment Report, I'm Samara Freemark.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation, the George Gunn Foundation, and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
Earth and sky.
Worldwide coal resources may not be as extensive as people thought.
You're listening to Caltech engineer David Rutledge, who spoke to Earth Sky at a recent science meeting. He said governments around the world have overestimated coal reserves, the amount of coal still available for energy use.
That estimate, though, at least for these trends, appears to be high for coal.
To figure out how high, Rutledge studied trends in countries that have already run out of coal.
I have a librarian who spent a year collecting the production numbers for, you know, all of the coal-producing countries of the world back to about 1800.
Rutledge's study suggests that ultimate coal production, or total production for past and future mining, is only 60% of what governments around the world estimate. In other words, no matter what you may think of coal as an energy source, the fact is we may have less to burn than previously believed.
It would be good news for climate change. I think it is true that the biggest unknown in predicting future climate is the amount of fossil fuel that we will burn.
Rutledge added his estimate provides a good reason to develop and transition to alternative fuels.
Yeah, you want to get cracking, independent of climate consideration.
That was David Rutledge, and I'm Lindsay Patterson for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
It's 2 minutes before 3 o'clock. Coming up at 3, The World from PRI. Barack Obama's foreign heritage was a major talking point in 2004. Then he became a presidential candidate, and his African father and Indonesian childhood were dropped.